This is Behind the Story, a program where we take you straight to the source. In this episode, we talk about traditions, just in time for Baylor homecoming. First, we'll hear a story about cellgating, a growing tradition at McLean Stadium. And after that, we'll talk with Amanda Norman, university archivist with the Texas Collection at Baylor. Norman talks to us about all the traditions associated with homecoming and the university. Flash forward a year after the Riverfront McLean Stadium opened, and at any home game, like the one I'm at now against Rice University, you'll hear the sounds of boats snaking their way through the Brazos River. Which isn't too unusual, but these boats aren't just taking in the scenic view. They're here to cellgate. By the time cellgating became a fixture at home games in 2014, Alex Dixon had already set up Baylor Bear Mata, partly as a means to stir interest in the new tradition, and partly to brag about it.
I just really wanted to create hype for it because I felt like it was a really cool tradition that, you know, would make every single Big 12 school jealous and just be a lot of fun for a lot of Baylor alumni. So, and I'm happy to be out here, and, you know, everyone here along the Brazos is starting a tradition, and it's not every day you can do that.
But across the country, cellgating isn't really anything new. Since at least the 1960s, the University of Tennessee's Vol Navy has sailed to Chattanooga before their home games. And even before that, Washington University treaded their way into Husky Harbor. But Dixon says cellgating in Texas is a bit different, and that's what makes it better.
Here, you just tie up right next to the stadium. You tool around the beautiful Brazos River, and you can't get as close to the stadium as anywhere else in the country from the water. So it's definitely unique to Texas and definitely something you can only do at Baylor.
For this particular game, there are at least 30 boats that have filled the so-called Baylor Basin, looking at their options to dock. There's a free first-come, first-served tie-up wall, and also a row of 18 boat slips. But to secure a spot for the year on this private dock that's run by the Bear Foundation, you'll have to make about a $3,000 donation. But not being able to find a designated spot hasn't stopped latecomers and more enterprising fans from just shoring up along the riverbank. Standing next to her 51-foot Sea Ray yacht, Lisa Spitz says the allure of all of this is it combines the popularity of college football with the fun of sailing.
And I never knew all of this was here either. All I knew about Waco was Baylor was here and you could get a beer at George's. And now there's all of this.
Spitz and her husband moved to Waco from North Texas to set up Waco River Charters and take part in the sailgating business. It's been a hit, she says, and since last year she's been sold out of boats to rent during the 2015 football season. But sailgating isn't just a growing tradition or a bubbling business model. It's also morphed into a recruiting tool to impress athletes and their families.
So sometimes you'll bring some recruits on and give them a little tour?
Well, not on this boat. We just do transportation. They go over to the Farrell Center and look at the center and do a workout with the coaches. And we have a smaller boat that we then bring them over here, and then they all go to the stadium.
Recruiting top-tier athletes, which can translate to more wins, not only helps to further new traditions like cellgating, says Dixon, but it also just brings out more fans.
I think the enthusiasm with Baylor football has translated into the enthusiasm of the fans coming in and tailgating early and really enjoying Waco and the new beautiful stadium. So,
with an hour left until kickoff, the band and a steady flow of fans are working their way into the stadium. Some, however, are settling in and watching the game on TV with snacks and drinks, all from the comfort of their boat. With KWBU, I'm Carlos Morales. Now we'll hear from Amanda Norman, a university archivist with the Texas Collection at Baylor. Thanks for talking with KWBU today, Amanda. So first off, can you tell me a little bit about homecoming and really those early years in the 1900s and how it got started?
Absolutely. Homecoming gets started at Baylor in 1909. I'd say for the Smithsonian are the oldest collegiate homecoming celebration in the country, beating out some other contenders, Mizzou, University of Illinois, and some others have their claims to it. But as I say, Smithsonian says that we are the oldest. And so in 1909, Baylor alumni got an invitation from the university saying, I'm quoting here, come and catch the Baylor spirit again. The purpose was to give a chance for students to come back and reunite with their old Baylor friends and feel the warm hand clasp of their fellows, recall old memories and associations. It was organized, there was a faculty committee with Frank Guitar, W.H. Poole, and George Ragland. And I'd say they did explicitly say in the promotional materials that this was not a fundraising event. It was just about coming back to hang out with your old friends and celebrate being a Baylor Bear. I'd say they did it during the week, which is kind of something that now it's a weekend event. But I'd say it was a couple days of festivities and kind of started on Wednesday and had reunions and an old-time soiree that night. And then the next day was the parade and homecoming on Thanksgiving Day. So it was associated with the Thanksgiving holiday, which had been a traditional big football game occasion before. So they were tying in with that. They knew that they would be able to get a good turnout for the game for this event if they tied it in with Thanksgiving. And they did. Oh, there were about 5,000 people estimated to who came to that game.
And that's the first.
That's the very first.
The homecoming. Very first homecoming. Wow. Okay. So yeah, that's really interesting. That kind of to peg it with the traditional Thanksgiving mm-hmm. football game, which right. across collegiate sports in general, that's usually kind of like the game mm-hmm. Or rivalry kind of
right.
of sorts.
Right. And well, and with that rivalry thing, the. Say Baylor had traditionally played that game against TCU, which at the time was a hometown rivalry. TCU was in Waco up until the following year, 1910, when they had a fire and Fort Worth made an offer for them to move, and they made the move to Fort Worth. But before that, Baylor and TCU were very much hometown rivals, and so that was we played TCU for that game, and then for the next homecoming a few years later, even though they had moved away at that point.
Right.
And so that was very much in that it's the Thanksgiving game. Everything it's the city's two teams from the two big colleges. And
interesting. And now so it was kind of centered on Thanksgiving holiday, and now I mean it's October 20-somethings mm-hmm. that we're having it. Mm-hmm. When did that shift happen? Oh, yeah. Slowly over time.
The first two homecomings were with Thanksgiving, but then for the next one, and I think in 1924 was when they made the shift and wanted to play Texas A&M, and A&M and UT already had their traditional Thanksgiving rivalry football game. And so if we were going to play A&M, then it had to be on a different, a different date. And so that was when they UT and A&M will have their Thanksgiving game. We'll put homecoming and play A&M in October.
Oh, okay. And so today homecoming is just kind of one of those events that completely takes over the city. Mm-hmm. And you talked about this a little bit earlier, but was it kind of that same sentiment early on where it's just Waco becomes like homecoming central, like from right. like was that how it was in 1909?
It really was. In the 1909 Baylor Roundup, they and this is a student writing this, but they wrote, not in many years was the city so generally decorated in honor of any occasion. And the lariat says the homecoming was probably the greatest affair of its kind ever pulled off in the state of Texas. Maybe a little bit of, a little grandiose there, but the whole city did get involved with the parade, and the parade did go through downtown as it does today. And there were over 130 entries in the parade. in that very first one, there were, of course, a lot of student organizations and, say, the senior class marched in their caps and gowns. But then there were, say, different community groups and, say, school kids from elementary on up to high school, different bands and different community organizations of all sorts and, say, participated, had entries in the parade and shops that were on the parade route decorated their, storefronts and things like that. So it really was a citywide effort and celebration.
And when we're talking about, parades, mm-hmm. Why a parade? Was that just kind of like, centered around, like we said, Thanksgiving, and there's these Thanksgiving time parades, so they thought we should have one too? Or was there like any other reason for why a parade?
I think that it was just to say, if you're going to have a big celebration, you should have a parade. A parade is the thing. And sometimes they call it a procession or a parade in the 1909 materials, and then in the for the 1915 homecoming, which was the next homecoming, they called it a pageant sometimes, which is kind of funny. Then parade does become the agreed upon parlance for the event. But as I say, at that point, I was looking up a little bit about parades earlier, and the Macy's Day Parade does mm-hmm. not come around until the 1920s, so we don't have that straight up. But the Rose Bowl Parade that does start in the 1890s, and the Association of Roses Parade. So we have that precedent, and people have been having parades for many years. And I think if you're going to have a big celebration, if you're going to have a big event, then it should be a parade.
It should have a parade.
Some part of it. And at that time, about half of the entries in the first parade were in automobiles and carriages, and then everyone else was on foot. Around the 20s, 30s, you start to see the floats, people starting to think in those terms of decorate, making a float. Before that, the descriptions of the cars, that they were tastefully decorated with green and gold bunting and pennants, and some automobiles were even ornamented with yellow chrysanthemums, and students on foot were adorned to suit individual tastes, says the roundup.
So a lot of cars with just our floats with mm-hmm. the chrysanthemums and just everything decorated by the 1920s. Mm-hmm. Homecoming itself started in 1909, mm-hmm. but the next one wasn't until a couple years later, right?
Yeah.
So what was it that kind of jogged it to become an annual event?
Right. Yeah, I think that, when they had the first one, they had this idea, let's bring everyone back to campus and have a big celebration. I don't know if at that point they were really thinking in terms of it being an annual event. They have it again in 1915 as the second one, and that's after World War One, so that may have shaped some of that too, that between 1909 and 1915 we have the Great War and some unrest and that may have influenced some of the decision not to have these celebrations at that point. But they have it again in 1915, and that's kind of by popular demand, alumni writing in to say, that was really fun. We should do it again. When are we going to do that again? And so the university says, okay, we'll do that again. And then we don't have it again until 1924. So it's, they kind of have those gaps, but then it really is alumni writing to the university and gathering up together. The Alumni Association takes charge of it for a little while and says, okay, we will organize it, because it was a lot of work. And the faculty organized the first couple, and they had classes to teach and other things to do. So I think it helped to have the alumni come and say, okay, we will help with organizing and putting this putting on these events. And then later the Baylor Chamber of Commerce student organization takes charge of homecoming, and they're the ones who coordinate all the different parts of homecoming now, the parade and Friday Night Flashback and the bonfire and all those things.
So it really became kind of an alumni push, really, mm-hmm. to kind of maintain and, yeah. and keep that homecoming yeah. Tradition going.
Yeah, I'd say they enjoyed it. I'd say it obviously was successful. There were a lot of people who were coming to celebrate Baylor. And I think that, too, one of the things that probably helped encourage, especially in the 20s, Baylor was having some athletic success. We had a couple of Southwest Conference championship wins, and I say, as always, that gets people, you know, really excited and reinvigorated, and like, we should come back to campus and celebrate being Bears, and say we want to come, and you know, and say come to these football games wherever people have dispersed to. They want to come back and have this big event.
And when we're talking about homecoming, there's talk of a homecoming queen and a homecoming court. Mm-hmm. So was that having a queen and having a court, was that present early on, or is that kind of like a recent development?
It comes a little bit later. In the 1930s is when we have our first homecoming queen chosen, and Elaine Cross Roberts. Didn't know this until recently, that queen candidates were considered alongside floats for the organizations they represented. So you've got a queen, the award was given to the queen / to the float. So floats were judged on originality, and queen candidates were judged on beauty, poise, graciousness, and charm. And then the queen and winning float were named at halftime of the homecoming football game. So it was this organization basically has won the best homecoming queen candidate / homecoming float. And and that actually doesn't get separated until the 1970s, which I thought was very interesting. And then, now there are separate awards given for homecoming queen in court versus the floats.
Okay, interesting. So, because I know today it's kind of the main test, I guess, or evaluation standard is does the person represent the standards and
right.
the values of Baylor mm-hmm. University. So, but early on, it was not only does she do that, but how's the float?
As you're preparing your float, you're thinking about which young lady is best going to represent your organization, you know, in the similar sort of way of the standards of the university. But how does she work with our float? And I don't really know how that works exactly to
interesting, yeah.
tie those things up together. But
it did. It happened. And throughout the years, and especially when we find that the homecoming traditions really gotten hold and mm-hmm. people are, looking forward to it every year, and it's mm-hmm. become this annual event. Mm-hmm. How has it grown in, size or scope from mm-hmm. those really early formative years to something we see, today?
Right. Well, certainly in numbers, of course, as Baylor gets bigger and mm-hmm. The enrollment increases, then and more and more alumni too return to campus. During World War II, homecoming festivities were not celebrated for a couple of years, and so 1946 was a huge homecoming celebration to come back around and put on the big parade again and all the festivities. And then a couple of years later, the Student Union building is finally completed and dedicated, and that helps with now they have a place where students can check in or alumni can check in, so they really know how many people are coming before it's we know how many people come to the football game because how many tickets are sold, but it's harder to count how many people come to the parade and who
right.
don't participate in all the events. Then there are just parts of the tradition that have grown, like adding pigskin review comes along in the 1950s, so alumni can see the winners of Sing, which has become an increasingly major Baylor tradition. So that gets added to the homecoming festivities. And both Sing and pigskin were established by Marie Mathis, who worked in the Union Building, and she's notable for involvement with several Baylor traditions. And the late 40s, the freshman mass meeting is added into homecoming week, and that's more for students and freshmen, and is a way of memorializing the Immortal Ten. and say the students who were lost in that tragedy in the 1920s. Before that time, there had been, say, closer to when that tragedy happened, the university had memorial services regularly, but that observance kind of faded away after a few years. After President Brooks died, it just kind of fell aside. And then in the 40s, a group of students and faculty staff decided this was something that we should do, and this was something that they could incorporate into homecoming on the Thursday night as a somber way to honor those who went before, past Baylor alums, and to remember the students lost in that tragedy. Then there are things, the bonfire, which was there from the beginning, but at first there were a number of fires around campus, and the freshmen were defending them from TCU. The opposing team was coming to try to extinguish.
Shenanigans. Yeah. And, yeah.
and then it evolved into the upperclassmen trying to, have shenanigans and trick the freshmen away and trying to extinguish flames. And then there becomes one central, big fire. I'm guessing someone decided that maybe it wasn't such a good idea to have lots of fires around campus. We were in a more residential area at that time, too, so I would think that would contribute. But then there were the freshmen would stop cars driving onto campus to make sure that they weren't up to no good, and the driver of the car would have to kiss each of the guards if they wouldn't kiss their date in front of them. And that tradition continues into 60s or 70s or so. And
this is all in effort to prevent someone from messing with the bonfire.
With the flame, with the eternal flame that will light the bonfire. And so
That's one way to do it.
That tradition hasn't stuck around so much. I think that one eventually died off. But the pep rally, which is now extravaganza, before the lighting of the bonfire, has become an increasingly big event, too. And then there are some more recent additions, like Friday Night Flashback, that the Baylor Chamber puts on a display of on Baylor history and memorabilia in the first floor of the Student Union Building, of the Bill Daniels Student Center. And they pull some items from the Texas collection, from the Mayborn, and different areas that have pieces on Baylor history. So that's something that, alumni can go into and just explore and see some interesting old things about Baylor's past.
So Flashback Friday is one of the newer additions?
Yeah, Friday Night Flashback.
Yeah.
I'm not certain when it started, but it hasn't been around for too long. Okay. And it, it's not a huge thing, but as alumni are coming and getting to campus, usually on Friday, they can, before or after Pigskin, they can come in and
check out all the old archives and just kind of get a sense of Baylor in years past. And that's so interesting, and especially the now foregone tradition of how to secure the eternal flame of the bonfire with asking them to kiss the guards. But so when we're talking about these traditions that have faded, that one's really interesting. But are there any other traditions that have started off and maybe have been prominent but now are just no more?
Not so much that with homecoming. There are some just other traditions have learned this past year about the shoe scramble that – they may have done it at homecoming. I'm not certain if they did that, but it was students had to. It was kind of musical chairs with shoes during halftime. Students would take off a shoe and put it in the middle of the field, and then everyone runs around, and then you have to, the music stops, and you grab apparently just any shoe because you may not be close to your shoe, but if you have a shoe, then you can barter your way back to your own shoe. And students dressed up in costumes, and apparently there was like rehearsal for this, at least maybe just at the beginning of the season to get it, grow accustomed to it. I'm not sure. I say there are pictures in the Lariat of students, dressed up in pajamas and other just, costumes and, a pile of shoes in the middle of the field during halftime. And that one, I say it lasts for a few years. It's, during the football game, all the home football games. And then it just kind of, I think it was somewhere around wartime, I believe. And it just kind of fades away after,
That's interesting. And another thing that I found out about homecoming, which I thought maybe not a lot of people know, or at least maybe outside of the Baylor sphere, is that during homecoming, the Baylor Bear was revealed. That's when the mascot was announced, right?
It was selected in 1914, and then the 1915 homecoming was, they'd announced it before that. They had an election, and they probably heard all we could have been the ferrets or the bookworms or the buffaloes.
Antelope was one too, I think. Yeah.
Yes. And, so good choice, students, on choosing the bears. But they had an election, and they announced it in the Lariat, but it was, I think probably fully embraced at that 1915 homecoming, where that's the first time that Baylor can say that the Bears won the football game, the homecoming football game, very thoroughly, 51-0 against TCU, and so before that time, at the 1909 game, it's just Baylor won, and at 1915, we can say the Baylor Bears won the game.
Okay, so before 1915, there was no real mascot association with the university?
Yeah, at that time, once we had our school colors, which have come on in 1897, sometimes you'll see us referred to as the Green and Golders. And you'll also see people call us the Baptists. So the Baptists versus, A&M, they would call it the Farmers. So the Baptists versus the Farmers game. And now it's a good thing that we can be Bears and Aggies instead of the Baptists and the Farmers. And
makes things probably a little easier,
And TCU was the Christians, which is like the Baptists versus the Christians. That doesn't seem right. So, and another, and this isn't as much with homecoming, but they did have basically junior varsity or freshman teams. And so there would be the Cubs versus the Tadpoles for the Horned Frogs.
Oh, okay.
And the Shorthorns were was UT instead of the Longhorns. And
so just different levels of
right, the babies.
Well, Amanda, I thank you for stopping by and talking to KWBU about traditions today. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Amanda Norman, University Archivist with the Texas Collection at Baylor. This has been Behind the Story. To hear this episode and past episodes, visit our website at kwbu.org.